Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you. Today, I'm speaking to the Chief Administrative Officer for the Village of Masset on Haida Gwaii about the provincial funding for temporary updates at the Masset Airport. But first, effective at 12 noon Pacific Daylight Time today, June 8th, 2023, Category 1 campfires will be prohibited across the Nedina Fire Zone, which includes the Nedina Forest District. The campfire prohibition will prevent human-caused wildfires and protect public safety. Specifically, prohibited activities that would constitute a Category 1 campfire include fireworks, sky lanterns, burn barrels or burn cages of any size or description, binary exploding targets, tiki and similar kinds of torches, chimneys, and air curtain burners. This prohibition does not include the use of outdoor stoves. Anyone conducting a Category 1 campfire anywhere in the Nedina Fire Zone must extinguish any such fire by 12 noon today. This prohibition will remain in place until September 30th of 2023 and unless the public is otherwise notified. For more information, go to gov.bc.ca and click on Public Safety and Emergency Services to read more and get updates. Now, let's hear from Joshua Humphreys in Masset.
My name is Joshua Humphreys. I am the CAO for the Village of Masset.
Okay, can you describe the Masset Airport?
The Masset Airport is a smaller certified airport. It's got a runway of about 5,000 feet. Recently, it's had some upgrades in the last couple of years. It definitely services all the tourism that comes to the island for fishing and other activities around the island, and is a great way to get in and out of Haida Gwaii.
And so we're speaking about it was $26,550 through the BC Air Access Program. It was for a temporary runway, taxiway, and apron lights in Masset. So I guess, how does this upgrade help or assist the Masset Airport now?
Well, being in a remote location, we do have a lot of opportunity sometimes with connectivity with, you know, electricity. We are on a generated system here. So if we ever do have power outages or power bumps, it can actually have a detrimental effect to the airport and the ability to be able to get aircraft in at nighttime. So we had a new airport manager that was just hired back in the fall and identified that we didn't have any emergency backup lighting, and that, you know, it was a recommendation from him that we should probably proceed with looking into it. And that's where we decided that that was probably something that needed to happen for the community and the greater Graham Island.
Mm-hmm. And so you applied for the funding, did you get everything that you asked for?
In this category, we certainly did get everything that we were looking for. We wanted to go with something that was easy to use, easy to deploy. So we went with a battery-operated LED lighting that would last about 2 weeks if we started turning it on. Typically in the summertime, we don't have a lot of opportunity because we do have these long, amazing days here. But in the wintertime, as the days shorten, we certainly have a lot of opportunity with weather conditions and things like that can pass through here quite frequently to maybe lose power at the site. And with having these lights, this just helps ensure that the community can get, you know, medevacs out or, you know, things of that nature to just, yeah, help out.
Are there other airports on Graham Island as well?
No, we are the only airport here. There is a federal airport in Sandspit.
Yep.
But you have to take a ferry to get across there. So really, I think we do ultimately do service Graham Island and all the different First Nations and municipalities that are here.
Yeah, so that's a pretty vital role then.
Yes.
So I guess, are there longer term updates that you're hoping to apply and maybe get some government assistance for the Masset Airport?
Yeah, the airport definitely has a few things on its wish list. you know, it's the airport was paved, you know, quite some time ago. So we'd like to probably approach the federal government, their ACAP program, and look at doing, or at least start looking into doing a runway rehab where we would get the runway completely repaved again and brought up to the standards.
Mm-hmm. Back in 2019-2020, the Masset Airport received $479,000 to the BC Air Access Program, and it was to improve safety and convenience for people traveling through Masset. So how did that money help to improve safety, security, and passenger facilities for the Masset Airport?
I think a lot of it went for infrastructure. Unfortunately, I wasn't here during that period.
Yeah, you're new.
Yeah. However, some of it went to upgrading our fueling system to just ensure that we do have fuel available for aircraft coming in and going. So that a big opportunity back in those days to just ensure that we had availability for fueling aircraft. So I think majority of that could have gone to that. And yeah.
Okay. How does the Masset Airport serve Haida Gwaii?
For most part, in the summertime, it is tourism. So there's a few lodges that are situated outside of Masset and on different islands. And they fly in here and then they jump in a helicopter and they fly out to their fishing destination for their you know, summer activities. But it also is fairly crucial, you know, for the locals to be able to get in and out, especially with a little bit more opportunity with our hospital. You know, medevacs are probably becoming more and more a standard as, you know, we do have a little bit of opportunity with just having enough doctors and nurses. And I think that's kind of affecting all the different regions. So what happens is normally, you know, they'll get to the emergency and if they can't potentially deal with that there, then, you know, they're put on a medevac right away. So I think that's really something that's so very important. And you know, working with the different communities here, you know, we've all identified that the airport is critical and certainly, you know, having support from Jennifer Rice too, to help us, you know, just even get this grant and certainly, you know, considering all of our needs around, you know, just the air service has been great.
Yeah. Well, Joshua, was there anything that I didn't ask that you think is important to add to this conversation about the airport?
No, it's just, it's very vital, you know, for us to try to, you know, keep it, you know, open, certainly with a small municipality like us, you know, it can be a challenge to, you know, certainly manage it and keep it up to the same par as everybody else. So, right. You know, there's always opportunities there where, you know, it would be nice to see something a little bit more consistent from, you know, the province and even the federal government to ensure that small air, you know, municipal airports are served, you know, and can keep their doors open and can stay compliant.
Yeah.
So it's a real challenge that faces us all right now.
Okay. And are you doing that through, you mentioned Jennifer Rice, who's the MLA for Haida Gwaii Prince Rupert as well. But is that something that your office at the Masset Council office, is that something that you work with Jennifer, or is it kind of just too big to start tackling now this early?
Being new here, yeah. it's on the agenda. It certainly is. But again, just, you know, being a very small municipal office of four people, it's a challenge to have everything on the agenda at once. And as we kind of move through the cycle here, I anticipate having those conversations with her and certainly anybody else that would like to listen. And I know council is very much in support of trying to, you know, get our airport recognized and, you know, find ways to, you know, grow it if we even could. So yeah, that would be kind of everything. As far as, you know, we're very centrally located and yeah, we have a lot of partners around us that use our facility, but necessarily, you know, it's and Port Clements too. So that's mm-hmm. another area that, you know, they generally travel up here for medical. And, you know, the ambulance will pick them up and bring them here. So, you know, it's definitely a little bit bigger than what you initially see on paper, I guess.
Last week, I spoke to Lenny Goggins in Powell River about a program called the New Inclusive Economy. The New Inclusive Economy is a traveling roadshow that'll be coming to the Bulkley Valley next week to showcase accessibility measures that employers in BC can start implementing in their businesses to make their workplaces more inclusive for people with disabilities. To hear that conversation, go to smithersradio.com and click on CICK News. But today, I want to share a conversation I had with a terrace man who is living with peripheral neuropathy and is gainfully employed in the construction industry. Mick Miller was at a cafe in Terrace when we spoke about his experience of having to advocate for himself during the hiring process and shared insights with me about invisible, ableist structures that exist in the North. Let's hear from Mick now.
Okay, so my name is Mick Miller. I'm 36 years old. I live in Terrace, BC, and I work as a heavy equipment operator with a small construction company in Terrace.
So we spoke about this a little bit before we were recording, but what are your thoughts on the term disabled?
So when I was younger, when I was in my early 20s, I did not like to identify as disabled. I also did not like the word. I thought it was dirty. I thought it belittled me. But as I've grown older and I would say matured and learned more about disabilities and, you know, just come to know myself better, I no longer think that word is bad. And I am more than happy and open to use the word disabled and say that I have a disability to people that are trying to understand me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we spoke earlier as well before the interview, but that, yeah, it's really, it does kind of seem like a personal choice, but I just know that in a lot of literature, especially about inclusivity and ableism, it is the term disabled that you see kind of used over and over again. But, and I know that there was a lot of polling done by the people who are creating these documents and doing these surveys and everything, but that doesn't mean that everyone fits into one box, right?
Yeah, no, yeah. Definitely.
So can you tell me a little bit more about what your job is and what you do?
Yeah, so I actually got into the kind of the construction / earth moving industry about a year and a half ago. I have a background in marketing. I have a degree in business administration, marketing specialization, and I worked in that area for a while, but I wasn't enjoying it. And I always wanted to work in the big kid sandbox, as people like to say. And I didn't pursue that when I was younger because I didn't think it was a noble career. I felt like I had to go to a university to prove something to myself, my peers, and others. But anyways, long story short, I finally took the jump and left my career in marketing. And I approached an owner of a small construction company here in Terrace, who some of my friends were working for. And I sat down with him and I was open about my disability and my limitations and how it would affect me on the job site. But I told him that I really wanted to, you know, get my hands dirty, work on the ground and inside the machines. And if he was willing to give me a chance, I would work my hardest and do everything to the best of my ability.
And how long have you been working for that company?
It's been about, I would say, a year and a half now about that. I only work kind of from the spring until the late fall. And then I don't work during the winters. So I would say about a year and a half.
And so, you know, what you just told me, it sounds like you were, you know, it sounds like you kind of approached your boss, well, your boss now, but the company, to kind of, I guess, explain your situation. Do you feel like that's necessary, that that's something that you feel like you always have to do when you're approaching a new job?
100%. Yeah, there's been jobs in the past, like, for example, marketing positions, where I didn't express some of the issues I have that are linked to my medical condition, which affected me in the workplace. And actually, some of my employers judged me differently. And I think they wouldn't have done that had I been more open about my medical condition and the ways it affects me differently in the workplace.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you're kind of having to do the work to
basically, you know, make your wherever you work, your workplace, less ableist by doing that work in the forefront. Do you feel like that's fair? Do you feel like you wish that there was more work done by employers to make workspaces more inclusive and accessible?
Yeah, honestly, at the end of the day, I think the best advocate is yourself. I wish that employers kind of took more initiative to be open about hiring employees with a disability. And I think it is becoming more well known within various industries. But I think at the end of the day, the only way your employer is actually going to know about you and your disability is if you communicate it to them.
Do you feel like construction in general is, or earth moving services, as you described it, do you feel like that is an industry that is doing the work to be more forward thinking and inclusive? Or do you know of some industries that you feel like they're actually putting in the work instead of just lip service?
Well, it's interesting you say that. I follow some companies and some individuals on Instagram, one of which is actually a younger guy. He's about 21. He lives down in the States, and he has two missing limbs. And he's worked in the industry now for about 3 years. And he's had issues with previous employers, but he just got a new job with an employer who he was open about his limitations. And he said they've been very adaptive in, you know, putting him in a position where he'll excel. So yeah, saying that in short, the construction industry, there are definitely companies that are open and inclusive to people with different abilities, because there is a strong stereotype that you have to be, you know, a strong, non-emotional individual to work in that industry. But I think that's changing. Yeah. Slowly.
Yeah. Do you think that the province is doing the right amount or the right type of advocacy work I'll reference two provincial campaigns. One, which is called the New Inclusive Economy, which is all about teaching employers how to make their workspaces more accessible, less ableist, and more inclusive for people with disabilities. And the second is another one called Rewrite the Rules. And that was actually launched by the BC Human Rights Commission. And it was the same thing. It was acknowledging the gaps that exist in workplaces for people who are differently abled. But do you feel that, like, do you feel affected at all by these campaigns? Or do you think it's that you came and you were up front?
Yeah, no, I definitely was not affected by these campaigns. I think at the end of the day, it was just me communicating my medical condition and how it would affect me in the workplace.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the areas of society that you think need the most fixing in regard to ableist structures? And that can be both physically, so for people that have maybe a physical disability, or within groups like workplaces or community events or public spaces that just don't seem accessible due to, let's say, someone who has hearing loss. But what are the areas of society that you think really need to address and fix public spaces to be more accessible?
Ooh, I mean, that's a tough question. I guess the answer is going to be different depending on kind of your situation, your disability. Yep. So for me, my disability is that I have peripheral neuropathy, which affects the muscles in my lower legs, my ankles, my feet, my lower arms, my forearms, my wrists, and my hands. So I'm mobile, but I do have problems with mobility and stability due to lack of strength. So I guess for me, it's a tough question. What can society do to help me and maybe my other peers that have a similar condition?
I mean, if it's too hard of a question too, I guess it could just be things that you're like, Maybe it's like as simple as if more doors were pushed to enter a place rather than pull, or like, I'm just thinking about peripheral neuropathy and just, you know, like issues with like where it's like you need to have so much tactile, like you need to be able to use your finger, like all the way down to your fingers sort of thing. If there's things that it's like, wow, I never really noticed how annoying that is. Like, for instance, that you have to, at some grocery stores, probably not in the north, but in Ontario, you have to put a loonie into a grocery cart to pull a chain to get a free, to get your cart. Like, if you didn't have great hand mobility, you wouldn't be able to get a grocery cart.
You know what? It's actually funny you say that, because I was thinking that the other day. We do have that at our Save-On and I think Safeway. And there have been times where, especially when my hands get cold, my dexterity is awful. Yeah. And there's been a few times where actually I have not been able to get the quarter out of the cart. And I just said, heck with this. I'll just leave it for the next person. I can't be bothered. But so there are, and yeah, tactile, you know, like doorknobs, I have troubles. There was actually a business not too long ago where I couldn't open the door because I couldn't get a good grip on the doorknob to turn it. And even like getting in and out of big machinery can be incredibly challenging. You know, you sometimes need a lot of strength to be able to step onto the bigger machines. So yeah, even having like little adaptations on those machines, because it can be dangerous if you don't have the strength to pull yourself up into the machine properly.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, down to harnesses and things like that. So did they make adjustments, I guess, and feel free to not answer this question because it's about your business, like it's about the company work for. But if you feel comfortable, like, are there things that they did that you were like, that was a small thing that made a big difference?
No, like they didn't do any adaptations to the machine. They were just like, they just told me to like take my time. And there were times when I would bring like, for example, like a jug of like machine oil, engine oil, and I would use that to kind of help me get up into the machine.
Okay, yeah.
But we talked about having like a step ladder and stuff like that. But yeah, I haven't been on the big machines lately. As of recently, I've actually been on like little mini excavators and stuff, which are way easier for me to get in and out of.
Yeah. So, Mick, I work in radio. What is the way that radio and podcasting can be more accessible?
I actually have a podcast where I talk to entrepreneurs, traveling nomads, and other people that have disabilities who are living their best lives.
Oh.
Yeah, I only have about 7 episodes. Unfortunately, I have not worked on it in a while, but yeah, I started it about 1.5 years. It's called Adaptive. So, yeah, and I've thought about how my podcast can be accessible to people with maybe hearing or sight conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, like, I guess, for example, for, like, podcasting and radio, there's programs where you can get all of your content written out, and then there's a speaker, so like a person who I guess is blind, it can be read out to them.
No, that's a really good point. And also, I'm happy when people shamelessly plug their podcasts, because I'm always looking for new podcasts to listen to, so I'm very appreciative of that.
Yeah.
Now I'm kind of like asking you questions about your, you know, your life and your work and all that sort of stuff. But is there anything that I didn't ask about that you think is important for people to know? Maybe someone who's listening who is differently abled, living in a community in the north. Do you find that are there resources that you rely on that maybe not everybody knows about, or a piece of information or insight that you would like for someone to hear?
I wouldn't say any resources that I rely on, but I've kind of been a big believer in connecting with other people that have disabilities, and not necessarily the same disability as I have, but just seeing how they live their lives. And because everyone has advice on how to do things differently, and there's always a takeaway on, you know, how you can live your life you know, with their, with their given information.
Absolutely. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time and speaking with me today. And yeah, I just hope that there's, I think that if ever as a newscaster, I'm going to be speaking about, you know, disabilities and ableism and everything, you know, voices like yours are the ones that are, that really do matter and that sink in with people. So I'm really appreciative that you took the time to speak with me today.
Yeah, no problem. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks again for tuning in to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at skeenastrong.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks again to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters. I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.